Hello and welcome to Brain Trust Live number 327.
This week on the podcast, don't worry, America, cease panicking. Tulsi Gabbard will debate after all.
And Joe Biden finally remembers the good old days of endless gay bathhouse sex.
Plus, Bloomberg believes he's the only man who can save us from people much like himself.
And Donald Trump is a vindictive asshole, the impeachment edition.
And Syria, it's not great.
Plus, Donald Trump wants high voter turnout. For frenemy Sean Spicer on Dancing with the Stars. Not the election, don't be daft.
We'll have all this and more.
This is Brain Trust Live. Hey guys, I'm Brent.
I'm Lila, and you can find us on the web at www.braintrustlive.com.
That's right.
We're coming to you a day late.
Yeah.
We're coming to you on the day of...
A day late and a dollar early.
That's right.
I don't know what that means.
The day of the presidential Democratic debate,
number four. Extravaganza, really.
It's quite an extravaganza because as if 10 people weren't enough on your debate stage.
I know.
We're going bigger this time.
This is the thing. I have had a lot of people tell me that they are not going to watch because there's going to be 12 people and like 10 people is too many.
That's a fool move.
So that's a fool move because this is going to be 12 people. So they're going to have less time to talk and at least half of them are going to have to bring their flamethrowers.
I mean, there's going to be nothing else that they can do. Let's be honest with ourselves. These Democratic debates are not about finding out where people stand on positions.
No.
I mean, on platform.
Sure.
Policy. You know the word I'm looking for. The P word that I was looking for. What these debates are about is creating 3 hours of television that involves fireworks.
Yeah.
And this is going to be more fireworky than the last debates because there's going to be too many people for anyone to make any normal points.
Right. Well, and also because this very well could be, and this happened after the second debate too, and we told you that between the second and the third debate, this would be the last time that you would see some of these people, and we were right.
Yeah.
Because, you know, you didn't see Tim Ryan at debate number three.
You'll never see him again.
You didn't see Steve Bullock at debate number three.
Thank God. You didn't see
a lot of these people at debate number three. And the same can be said about between four and five.
Yeah.
We told you a couple of weeks ago about, you know, that they've changed the criteria to
get
into debate number five.
I think eight people have qualified so far for debate number five. So it's not going to be as small as we'd hoped.
Right, exactly.
But 12 people ended up qualifying for this debate, and that's why they decided to do it in one night.
Right.
And here's who's going to be there.
Yeah.
So you have your obvious big three, the Warren, Biden, Sanders.
Yes.
You have your kind of mid-tier crew, the Buttigieg, Harris, Booker, Castro, Beto, Klobuchar types.
Yeah.
Then you have some oddballs.
Yep.
First of all, you have Andrew Yang, not a surprise. But you also have Tom Steyer, who hasn't been at any of the debates yet. And then late-minute entrant Tulsi Gabbard, who then for a while tried to pretend like she was going to boycott the debate for reasons I couldn't tell you.
Right, because she wanted to...
Because of unfairness or something.
Right.
Because of the concept of unfairness. And... then she announced to the zero people that were following the story that she would, in fact, attend. And then, hilariously, Amy Klobuchar responded to that tweet with, so will I.
I know. So
like,
good.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So you were all coming, I guess?
Yeah.
As we all suspected we all were?
Yeah.
But that means that not attending is Marianne Williamson, Michael Bennett, Steve Bullock, John Delaney, Wayne Messam, who hasn't attended any of these, so I don't know why he's on our list, Tim Ryan, and Joe Sestak.
Yeah.
So... all of the people that you couldn't remember the names of in the first place are gone, plus Marianne Williamson.
Continue not remembering their names.
Don't worry about them. They're dead to us.
Yeah.
As far as who's qualified for November, you know, we have the big three, and then Harris, Buttigieg, Yang, and Booker, and Steyer.
Yikes.
Which
they've
is not,
already?
But Klobuchar hasn't.
They have enough 3% polling? That's cuckoo bananas right now.
Well,
he's buying it.
He's buying it. He's been running campaign ads since the dawn of time.
Yeah.
He's a billionaire.
Yeah.
So he has all the money to buy all the TV ads he wants.
Yeah.
In any state.
It doesn't...
All the states,
the one
really.
Thing that I think has probably helped him is the whole...
The fact that we are doing
impeachment, because that's what he had before he was an actual presidential candidate. The only thing that he was doing was spending billions of his own dollars running advertisements for impeachment.
Right. Yeah, so it looks like he somehow brought this about. But in fact, he had nothing to do with anything. He's just some guy who coincidentally also wanted impeachment.
Yeah.
But in any case, here's what to look for at this week's debate.
Yeah.
Because we are going to be putting this up on the day of the debate. You will want to be prepared.
Yeah.
As Brent noted, you'll want to look out for the zingers.
Zingers.
It's going to be a lot of zingers. There's only time for zingers. There's no time for anything else.
Nope.
Warren is now the front runner in a lot of polls. That has changed the dynamic a little bit. It's going to change her relationship with Biden in this debate a little bit, I would guess, and also mean that she's going to be a point of attack for some people who were kind of laying low on her beforehand.
I think so too. I think I think we'll see. And granted, no one will care, but I think that you'll probably see Tulsi Gabbard attack her on something. I read something about, you know, Bernie Sanders did an interview the other day where he called her a capitalist, and he was like, not in a mean way necessarily. He also said that they've been friends for 20 years. But like, you know, I think that you're going to see, and also Biden recently has said that the one thing that he has learned from these debates is that you have to be more aggressive. I don't know why he took him to debate number four to get there after he had his ass handed to him multiple times.
Debate number one was being the first time.
But yeah, I think especially with this limited amount of time that everyone is going to have, and also knowing that some of these people need to do something, anything. I think that's why I'm telling people to watch.
Yeah,
because
I'm excited.
In terms of fun television, I think this might be it.
Yeah. I'm curious to see what they go after her on, because she's kind of a difficult candidate to attack. She's thought through the plans that she has. So you can attack them as being unreasonable because they're too optimistic.
Well, that's the thing.
And
I
that's
mean,
really
we
all they
to,
have
you know,
to do.
After
and then you
heading,
can...
in, heading into the last debate, you know, we, I think, talked about a specific story where we that Joe Biden had sort of decided that at that time, and she was already rising in the polls at that time, it didn't actually make sense for him to specifically attack her in any sort of like real way, just because like she is also the most liked candidate on the stage.
No,
too.
I think
so. You sort of like, you know,
rough.
I mean, to a degree, it doesn't, you have to do it in a very thoughtful way, certainly on policy. But as you said, if you're Joe Biden, you don't want to attack her on policy because you're a know nothing,
exactly,
and she's a know everything. So that's a tricky situation that you're getting yourself into attacking
and also,
her on policy because, like,
he has to be careful, he's going to look like he's mansplaining things to her, and a lot, you know, Buttigieg is going to have that problem too. He's going to look like he's sassing, like a more experienced statesperson, And they're going to have that issue going into it. A lot of them don't want to draw attention to the areas where they don't agree with her because her platform is quite popular with the base.
Right.
So they're going to have to spend a lot of time explaining why these fantastical... They're going to have to John Delaney it, essentially.
That's exactly
don't dream, America. Dreaming is where we get in trouble.
Yeah.
And that's a tough platform to... That's a tough soapbox to stand on.
It is.
So I'm curious to see about that. We also see where Joe Biden's head is at. Will he be continuing to remember all the wonderful rampant gay sex of the 80s that he recalled earlier this week?
Will his teeth actually fall all the way out this time?
Right. How far out will his teeth be? Will he remember his own name? Will he encourage parents to turn on the record player at night for
their
kids?
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
We don't know if he's going to make any sense, and we're excited to find out.
Yeah.
But I think of the big three, the second biggest story besides what's going to happen to Elizabeth Warren is what shape is Sanders going to be in?
100%.
This is his first big appearance post-heart attack.
Yep.
Will he look vital and youthful and energetic? Will he look angry in the way that we've become accustomed to him being? Will he look tired?
Yeah, and I don't know. It'll be interesting to see how he looks, but like honestly, you know, we talked just sort of like politically how it probably helps Elizabeth Warren for, you know, his health to be declining, as sad as that is,
right.
But she sort of is the one that makes the most sense for his people to go to. But like, also when she is up there in the middle of the stage with Bernie at 78 and who's just had a heart attack, and Biden, who looks like he's in his early hundreds
and
granted,
talks like he's in his
she's
early
70, but she has been making a big point to be as energetic as possible. I mean, she looked like she was cracked out when she came out for that LGBTQ thing. She was just posted a video today where she was like sprinting around Las Vegas Pride with a giant rainbow boa wrapped around her with drag queen. I mean, like, she is making a big show of her like vitality right now.
And she's able to because the two front runners she's up there with look like they're both on death's door. And one of them, like, Sanders has always looked like he was on death's door, but he usually sounds kind of put together.
Yeah.
Biden has not been sounding put together at any point in this conversation.
No.
So even though he's a very handsome man, he is not getting away with seeming youthful just because of
no,
his handsomeness, because he doesn't make any fucking sense.
I know.
So the other thing to keep your eye on besides those dynamics is also just like who is going to find a way to make themselves relevant out of the you know, nine people who have nothing to do with anything, who will also be on the stage.
Yeah.
You know, Tulsi's going to try some excitement because that's been her strategy this whole time. But, like, what are some of these middling people going to do?
I actually have an opinion on this.
I'm excited to hear it.
Because, you know, a lot of people will say that they are undecided when you poll them. And I think that this race is less fluid than people would have us believe.
I agree.
Because what has been interesting is we have seen people sort of shoot up very briefly in, you know, we saw Harris had like a bit of a moment and then she sort of went back to where she was. We saw Buttigieg have a little bit of a moment and he went back to where he was. And on top of that, we've seen people who are outside of the top three or four have really solid moments in debates.
Yeah.
We had, not this last debate, but two debates ago, we had Julian Castro do really really well, where he sort of like handed Beto his ass on immigration. Every single debate, everyone has been always like, oh, that's right, Cory Booker, he's really great. And that has not allowed him to tick up.
Yeah.
I think this thing is a little bit more cooked than people are actually thinking that it is.
I think it's also,
you haven't seen any of those people's numbers move in a significant way, really, since they got in. Honestly.
Well, I think I was going to say, I think that is sort of creating its own lack of momentum, because it'd be one thing if in this bottom tier, people were shifting about and actually getting into the top tier, getting into double digits at some point, and then going back down again. And they're not really, like, they're maybe getting to 11%, but they're not really ever getting to the point where they're touching these big three.
No.
And as much as we would, you know, people would like to have you believe that, like, Sanders' polling has been going down.
It has.
It's been trending downwards for sure. But he has not exited that top tier at any point.
No.
And none of these other people have reached it.
He's still always been third, and often the third person of the only three that are in double digits.
Well, like, he's the low-hanging fruit of the top three, and no one is anywhere near him anywhere else on this in this field. And the fact that there are so many of them and they haven't dropped out yet is, I think, making it hard for any of them to kind of rise above it. And it's because they're all kind of pulling around the same amount, you know, and kind of switching around for at most 8% of the vote.
Right, exactly.
Like, I don't know who's going to drop out.
Yeah.
But they're all fundraising just enough to stay in the race.
Right.
They're all getting just enough support to stay in the debates. And then they're all just sort of like sitting there.
Yeah.
And in reality, we're having a conversation between the same players we had a conversation between last time. It's the progressive wing of the party and the centrist wing of the party. And, you know, the rest of these people are great debate additions because they always add one issue of interest or, you know, one area of interest or one good zinger or whatever.
Right.
But they're not really kind of, they're not going to be able to distinguish themselves in the way that you need to enter the top tier, I don't think, in this format, at least.
I agree.
There could be some weird thing that happens that suddenly one of them becomes relevant. The other thing is, I don't know what thing could happen that would make them relevant. None of them are foreign policy experts.
Right.
Foreign policy is happening. But none of them are, like, trade experts. You know, the person with the most expertise in the economy is Liz Warren. That's why she's in this position. Like, there's not going to be a moment where we need an expert in being personally gay. So, like, Buttigieg doesn't have any expertise other than being a mayor and personally himself being gay. There's not going to be a moment where we need someone with a really poor criminal justice record.
Right.
So, Harris, I don't know where she's going to find her moment. You know, like, there might be a moment where there's not going to be a moment where we need some bullshit unity rhetoric that Cory Booker has been sort of staking his campaign on.
Sure.
There have been immigration moments, and Castro hasn't been able to capitalize on those. He has been great in the debates about them, but he hasn't been able to capitalize in terms of his own polling. So, like, I don't know what moment we're all waiting for where one of these jokers is. We're not going to have a moment where Amy Klobuchar becomes the person we need to save the day.
No.
I would actually love it if she was the Biden person in the race, because I think that would be an interesting race. If she was the centrist candidate in the race.
I can see that.
It would just be a smarter conversation. And I don't agree with her on anything, but I feel like she at least makes sense most of the time, you know?
Yeah,
She's a better candidate than Joe Biden. Like, you are a centrist right now,
find someone else.
Literally, go support Amy Klobuchar. She's basically a Republican.
Right, or Pete Buttigieg.
Or Pete Buttigieg. He's basically a Republican in meaningful ways that we will get into later.
Right. Cory Booker is there for you.
Is there to talk about unity and nothing else. To talk about
you could find
bipartisanship.
You can find five centrists to go to if you're
looking for anyone.
One.
Anyone's there for you. It's like Joe Biden. But like, if you want to be someone, if you want to be on the far right of the Democratic Party,
right?
Amy Klobuchar is right there, you guys.
They're there.
And I think she and Liz Warren would be a fascinating top two.
Sure.
And I would be mad if Amy Klobuchar polled anywhere near
right.
Liz Warren, but I'd be interested to hear the debate.
Yeah.
In any case, as Brent mentioned, there was a really exciting LGBTQ town hall this
I often don't watch week. These. I will watch an individual town hall of someone, but like I did
talking.
Not watch the climate ones, and I sort of felt a little bad about it, but it's just sort of like,
who has five hours?
I mean, this was supposed to be 5 hours, but Sanders didn't go, so it was 4.5 hours.
Which
but it was
still
like
too many hours.
Nine candidates with like 30 minutes each, and it was just too much, but I was like, all right, well, they're talking about my people, so I should watch.
Gotta investigate.
And it was actually way more exciting than I was expecting.
I was
going to
say, on this issue in particular, it feels like there was opportunities for excitement that climate change didn't offer.
Sure. The one thing that I will also say about these before we sort of like dig into some of the specific ones, also, I did not watch all of them. I'm not going to lie to you people.
Well,
because
it's
who,
like,
I've been, speaking of Amy Klobuchar, I'm not trying to watch her talk about
don't
anything
care.
For 30 minutes.
No.
I mean, yikes.
Certainly
guys.
Not gays.
No. But the one thing that I will say about these, and like obviously I like being spoken directly to, and I even like when people tell me things that I want to hear. But like that's really all you get in these. Like
of
if
course.
You get if you get like a child who is a 10-year-old trans person who comes up and asks you a question about whether they should be teaching what trans people are in public schools,
yeah.
like Elizabeth Warren is not going to be like, no.
Right, exactly.
Yeah, so like you get sort of like that, kind of, it really all just, it feels a little like.
It's patronizing.
It's a little patronizing in a way. Yeah.
Of course.
Or
this
a lot patronizing in all the ways. I don't know.
For just
but.
Using up TV time. CNN has literally 24 hours a day 100%. To fill every
right.
single day.
That's right.
They are doing these because that's, 5 hours where they don't need programming.
Exactly.
And then they
yes.
can repeat it right after that. That's 10
totally.
Hours.
And it's like you said, we
free
talked
and
about
clear
this before.
Taken care of.
Then the news is made.
And then
on
they can talk
this,
about it.
And then you can read right.
You so. Basically can get a full 20 hours
you
of
can.
Nonsense out of creating 5 hours of nonsense one time.
Right.
And that's what they're
it.
Here for.
That's what they did. Yeah.
And that's what they did.
Yeah. So Warren won.
Well,
and I'm not okay. saying that. And I'm not saying that as
she won the
a,
media war too. I mean, she didn't just win because Brent and I love Liz Warren.
Right, and she won because she had a couple of the best answers. But she also, it was clear from truly the moment that she was introduced and came out on stage that she is a professional town hall haver.
She literally is. And she's also a person who takes unvetted questions at her town hall,
right.
which means that she's a professional random question
right,
answerer.
Exactly. Like, so SNL did like a really funny, their cold open was this. And like they have, what's her name? Playing Warren.
Listen, you know. I don't know the answer.
Okay, sorry.
I didn't watch it.
It'll fly into my head
right.
like 2 minutes from now and then I'll just say it and
yeah.
you'll think that I've gone crazy. Anyway, but she comes out and she was like, I had so many apple slices backstage that I'm just like hopped up on like that was like
how
they
McKinnon?
Like Kate McKinnon. It flew into your head,
yes.
not mine. There you go. And that's sort of like how she was. Like, I mean, she was just like there for this. You
she
can
had,
tell it,
had
this
the
is
apple
what she
slices.
Does. I mean, she'd had her apple slices backstage and she was ready to go. And she also had the moment that was like shared the most on social media, which was genius.
A moment
way,
that some might say Brain Trust Live handed her.
Right, exactly. We've been talking about this forever, whether it be gay marriage or abortion or whatever.
It's any
like,
of the
if
issues.
If you don't like gay marriage, don't have a gay marriage. If you don't
right.
like abortion, don't have an abortion. But that's somebody asked her what she would say to an old-fashioned person who said that a marriage should be between one man and one woman. And she was like, well, I would tell that person that you couldn't just get married to one woman if
right.
you can find one.
Well, first she
but
said, I assume this is a man asking.
Right, which was also good.
Which was hilarious.
Yeah.
And then she said, yeah, I assume, well, then I would tell them to marry a woman, assuming they could find one.
Yeah. And her delivery on it was really
good.
Solid.
Yeah.
And it didn't seem canned. It just seemed like someone who did comedy.
Yeah.
Which I don't necessarily know is what I think of when I think
no.
of her, which was why I think it was actually so hilarious because like it didn't,
yeah.
it felt like a moment that she sort of just thought of or at least delivered in a way that did not seem practiced.
Yeah.
And so it was really good.
It's also like the answer that people have been giving to this question.
Yeah, I feel like you haven't heard a politician
fun
give it,
people.
Though.
Yeah,
is it really
this
just
is what fun people say when
right?
You...
Because I think that most people try and come up with a thoughtful answer as to what to say to a person who might actually think that, and like how to, you know, quote some Bible verse or something,
right.
Which is probably
would
what
you want to cast judgment
done,
on
or
whatever,
something like that.
Not just
but
being
she
like,
was
okay,
just kind
don't
of
marry
like,
a fucking man.
Right?
Then.
She was just kind of like, well, fuck off.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. And that's what they actually again in that. I'm going to reference this a few times, actually, that SNL thing that they did. They actually had her put on this pair of, like, crazy glasses to, like, read people. Like, it was like the library is open, and Liz Warren is just going to, like, read you. She's going to read you for filth. And it was just, like, then her giving a bunch of, like, insults at stupid people.
Well, good.
Liz Warren emerged
as the comedian of the bunch.
Yeah, totally. And she got asked a few questions that were sort of, like, you know, fairly thoughtful questions about, like, whether we should do this or that. And then she kind of just, like, looked at, I can't remember it was who was interviewing her specifically, and she would just be like, yeah.
Right.
You know, it's like, should we pass the Equality Act?
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Everybody else went on a long, rambling answer about it, and she just sort of assumed that everybody knew what the question was, and she was just like, yeah,
also,
like, I don't need to tell you any more about that. Like, that's a fucking no-brainer. Like, just do that.
I think people like that about her, too, because sometimes
too.
You're just not, you don't, like, first of all, this is a stupid question, obviously, if it's something where you know the answer is yes anyway. But also, you don't need a politician to explain a common sense thing to you.
No.
Ever. You just, if it's common sense, you can assume, like, if it's something where you might not know how common sense it is, they can explain it to you.
Yeah.
But if it's something that is like a, should we pass an equal rights amendment?
Yeah.
Or an equality amendment? Or, yeah. Like, why would that need to be explained?
Right. Yeah.
One person who I'm sure did a lot of explaining of it was Cory Booker.
He did, and he was actually really great. He went first, and
I can see him being good in this context.
He's good in these forums because he's like very
charming.
He's charming. He's very smart. He's very quick on his feet. He does not blink when being asked a question. Like he's got it. You know, and it was on display, and to the point where it was actually like fairly impressive in a few ways. Like, just for an example, like, I was impressed where someone specifically asked him about how we could bring down the price and make Truvada more available to people.
Right.
And he immediately, without missing a beat, started talking about PrEP, which is what you call a once daily Truvada. That's the pill that you can take to not transmit or get HIV.
Right.
And the fact that he knew that that's what Truvada was, I was thinking later, as I was watching the Joe Biden one, which was immediately after him.
That's,
I mean,
so embarrassing.
Biden followed him.
For Biden.
I had a moment where I was sort of like, there's no way that he would have been able to sort of like identify that as PrEP, know what PrEP is. Booker then referenced the law that we had just recently passed in California, which allows pharmacists to be able to write prescriptions for that, so you don't have to go to
almost
a doctor.
Almost like he studied up for this forum,
well,
he knew he was going to do.
Right, exactly, which you would hope that everyone did. But I mean, like, his command of all issues, he never had a moment where he seemed like he was flustered or didn't have a great answer for something, to the point where he even hit on a questioner who was also bald, and he was like, you have a great haircut, and then called him a beautiful man.
Well, to be fair, as somebody who has been repeatedly accused of being a member of the LGBT community, he should have been informed on this issue in ways that maybe just as a person who, whether he likes it or not, is associated with LGBT people.
But he also,
would need
you know,
to be.
He does a good job of like being relatable in his question. You know, he also talked about like how he on the campaign trail has been tested for HIV just as like to try and sort of like remove the stigma of he really actually
he's charismatic.
He was really,
and it's interesting because a lot of these people are not that charismatic.
I talked to multiple people who, outside of thinking that Liz Warren just did a great job just because she did a great job,
right,
tell me, and this is, I sort of referenced this earlier about like how none of these times where he's been good has sort of ever led to him sort of like ticking up in the polls.
Yeah.
But I had multiple people who watched this tell me that they thought he freaking crushed it.
Yeah, I could see
that. They're not going to vote for him though.
Right.
You know what I mean? It's like,
he never crushes it enough. He never crushes it in first place. He's always in second place.
Right. It's like outside of Warren, who was obviously the best one.
Exactly.
Cory Booker was really good too. Yeah.
Well, he's never going to be able to outrun the fact that he is compromised on some of the issues that affect Americans the most, like healthcare.
Well, I know. If he could make everyone forget about his policy positions, then he would be in a better... He would be in a much better position to be able to win this thing.
When I saw him at that fundraiser, that was what he was actively endeavoring to do.
Yeah.
Is remind us how he's a bridge builder and a unity guy.
Yeah.
And that's why we shouldn't talk about details. Why bother with the details when he wants to just make everyone happy?
Yeah.
Biden did terribly.
Oh, this was a good one. This was what you came for. Besides Biden, Liz Warren reading people.
Biden has had a continuous problem with diarrhea of the mouth, obviously. I'm not surprised to hear that Joe Biden is not a man who knows how to have an intelligent discourse about LGBT issues.
No. Even though he basically like invented the idea of gay marriage.
As you might have guessed.
Which he told repeatedly.
In the way that Al Gore invented the internet and other politicians have
Al
invented.
Al Gore more invented
definitely
the internet.
Has a more credible claim to inventing the internet than Joe Biden has to inventing gay marriage.
Yeah.
But he just, as he has done in the past.
Yeah.
Told an unnecessary story that was weird.
A very, very, very specific story with all of the details, including what these two men were wearing at the time, what car he and his father were driving in, the intersection in which he saw this take place. I mean, truly. And yeah. He said, like, which factory was down the road from where it was. I mean, like, this memory is a memory like no one has ever had before.
A memory. And this is a man who has not been having memories of regular policy positions that he's held for years.
Right.
This is a story of the time in 1963 on a specific street corner that he saw two men kissing for the first
time. That's right. I mean, it was a lot. In fact, again, going back to SNL, which I thought was hilarious, when Woody Harrelson who was playing him.
Mm-hmm.
He was, when he started on this story, he was like, now, I'm going to tell you a false memory that I had from 1963. And like, because it really felt that way. Well, I mean, it was just, it had too much meat on the bones.
This was a very jarring moment for him in a way that's not comfortable to recount.
Right.
Or he made it
up. It's like how you would remember all of the details, like on the day that you murdered someone.
Exactly.
Sort of. Like, right. Right? You know?
Yeah. Apparently he asked his dad about it.
Right.
His dad was like, it's no big deal.
They just
which
love
is
each other.
Exactly what I believe his dad in 1963 said.
Didn't
in
say
their
that.
Blue-collar factory town.
Right.
That's a, I'm sure exactly what the conversation between a man and his young son in.
Right. This was also being told to Anderson Cooper, by the way.
Of course.
So keep that
in
mind.
He kept saying Anderson in it. Like, he kept referencing Anderson Cooper by name in a weird way that made it feel like he was trying to prove to, it's like, it was like he was trying to tell a story about how he had black friends to a black person. Like, it was that kind of vibe where he just kept waiting for Anderson Cooper's approval.
Yeah.
Well, in an awkward way.
And I don't know if it's just because Cory Booker got into more details or if it was because Cory Booker was actually being asked more difficult questions or if I would be curious to know how many questions Biden actually got asked because he was just like rambling so much, which may have been his plan, was like the more
filibuster.
I could just tell false memories, right. the less questions I'm going to have to get asked. But having those two come right after each other really felt, it was noticeable.
Yeah,
I felt like anyway.
I'm not surprised to hear you say that.
Even to the point where the first question that he got asked was from Matthew Shepard's mother, who he then spoke to and said specifically he was like dear friends with. And I believe that. And she asked a very sort of like fair question that he, I think, gave like a mostly thoughtful response to. I don't even remember what it was about. But I mean, like, to the point where it was like they lobbed questions like from some of his pals from the audience.
Some of his best friends got to ask questions.
Right.
But he still found time to reference every like sort of gay stereotype from 1960 through 1985.
Right, as if they were like only 10 years ago.
That's
He has definitely lost track of, he's got lost time.
He's got lost time.
Going on.
Yeah,
he
talked
know
about waiters identifying themselves as gay.
Right,
that's not a stereotype anymore.
Like that wouldn't be, nobody would blink about that
10 to 15 years ago, all the stereotypes were about San Francisco bathhouses and round-the-clock sex.
I remember Anderson.
Here's
the gay bathhouses and
here's the thing that I want to point out. 10 years ago was 2009.
Right, we were voting on Proposition 8 in California 10 years.
Prop 8 was happening 10 years exactly. 15 years ago, 9/11 had already happened like 3 years before.
Yeah,
like we 10 to 15 years ago, we were not talking about gay bathhouses.
Correct.
So that was like 30 years ago that we were talking. The last time we were talking about gay bathhouses right.
and to bring
was
it
literally
up
30
at
years
all
ago.
Was just like don't, such
yeah,
a don't be doing that.
I mean, I feel like the first rule of going and doing an LGBT forum for CNN is try not to say the word bathhouse. I mean, there's nothing good can come of that. There's no, and right. certainly don't talk about round the clock sex no. in any presidential forum.
No.
At any issue that don't, no. don't, there is not a time on the trail no. that you ever need to talk about round the clock sex. You should just assume that that's never going to come up.
Oh man, it was so good though. I'm telling you, that was a solid one.
I mean, he's TV. Been having a lot of solid good TV moments. It's just that all of them are making him look like a foggy old man.
He has. The worst TV was from the homosexual. I mean,
man. But
and like, look, he, again, like, gave, he's a thoughtful guy.
Sure.
Pete Buttigieg.
Certainly talks a lot.
He also is one of the world's most boring people.
He's so boring.
I mean, it was
and
really
And I
want
to point out that Brent is saying that as a Midwesterner who initially sort of heard...
Remember when I was trying to sell you listeners on how
yeah,
great and wonderful people
because he was really going to appeal in the heartland.
I don't know that I ever
not the heartland. I mean, you know, but no, you said... but, you, when we were in Iowa, you were like, I see where his
oh,
message
yeah, sure,
is appealing.
Sure, 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 sure.
I mean, you weren't saying it was appealing to you, but you were sort of seeing what... you were hearing what they were hearing. I can't hear what people hear in Iowa.
Sure.
I'm hearing... When Pete Buttigieg opens his mouth, I'm hearing Alfred E. Newman... give a very slow speech about Bible verses.
Totally.
You know,
well, I agree.
That's, you were hearing what they were hearing, and now
and I
you've
think,
heard it enough.
Right. And I think that that was not actually the time and the place for that, only because, and I'm not saying that he should have been talking about, you know, bathhouses and round-the-clock sex as a gay person, but, like, in a room of, you know, this was sponsored by the HRC. It was mostly HRC people. There were a lot of HRC board members there. There were a lot of people from Equality California there.
Right.
I mean, he was preaching to the choir. And I realize it was on a national audience, but I would contend that even the national audience that was watching it was probably a little preaching to the choir.
Yeah.
I just don't know that, like, telling me how his relationship, how his marriage brought him closer to Jesus was really what everyone was looking for.
No one was looking for that. I can tell you, as a person who's never been looking for a relationship with Jesus, that that was not what people...
Yeah.
I can tell you, as a native of Chelsea, that that's not what a lot of the audience, if he was preaching to the choir, was looking for.
Sure. And that's not to say there's not gay Christians out
there. Of
course
there. Not.
But, like, if he's trying to sell gayness...
That's
to
as
a,
the
sp-
only
to
gay
a specific
candidate
audience
in the race.
To make himself more palatable as a candidate. This was a debate, makes sense, and he's done it at a debate, and I think that that was powerful in the sense that, like, that was
at the,
debate,
the
first
it offers
time
a contrast,
that it offers a contrast, and it was the first time that it had ever happened at a Democratic debate. So, it felt big.
Yeah.
This just didn't feel that way, and just to sort of listen to him sort of give a bunch of learned responses to every question that he gets asked is just it's not it.
Well, Brent, he didn't come out in time for the round the clock sex in the gay bathhouses, so he doesn't remember the exciting time to be gay.
Yeah.
He doesn't remember the good old days like Joe Biden does.
No, he doesn't.
He never had any good old days because he's been just an upstanding citizen his whole life.
Right, I know.
Who then just married some guy.
Yeah.
And then became the mayor of
who keeps emailing me about Peter.
Fucking emails.
I need Chasen Buttigieg to stop emailing me about Peter.
Yeah, it's gross. I said this on the last podcast. I don't want to hear from any of the spouses ever.
Sure.
There's not a spouse out there that I'm looking for an email from. If Doug fucking sends me an email, I don't care who the spouse is. Jill and no one. I especially don't like it when Peter sounds like a pet name that he has for him, which
like
is
it.
Too gross.
Yeah, don't be doing that.
Don't get me into your weird lovey-dovey nonsense games on the presidential trail.
And those are the only ones that I watched.
Right.
But before we leave this, we'll just leave you with one other thing, because there was some drama with one of the moderators, which was Chris Cuomo, because he did...
Who's been really in patting himself on the back mode recently.
Oh,
so
yeah. I mean,
it was nice that he had a moment
to
take him down.
Speaking of people who are claimed to be personally responsible for impeachment.
Exactly.
Add him to the list of Tom Steyer, Chris Cuomo. But he was doing the Kamala Harris one, and she came out and introduced herself and then said what her pronouns were, mm-hmm. which I thought was inspired. Like, that's, sure.
That was smart.
You know, that yeah. that was eaten up.
But certainly. Also, she's from California. Well, right. She should know what to do in this debate.
Right. So she was like, and my, you know, my pronouns are she, her, and hers. And then Chris Cuomo kind of like chuckled and was like, mine too.
Yeah, it's like, don't have this guy moderate your fucking LGBT forum.
And like the
forum.
Audience was like dead silent. And she sort of like looked at him very briefly, I think in a panicked fashion. Like he sort of like had like three heads. And then she was like, well, all right then. And then like they carried on with the town hall. And then like during that town hall, he was eviscerated online and then walked off the stage and had to
apologize
like officially.
It feels like this is just moderating an LGBT forum 101. Don't make fun of pronouns.
No.
If you are in the privacy of your own home in your bathroom mirror making fun of pronouns,
sure.
Go wild.
Right. I might have done it. I don't even feel great about it.
No, exactly. but listen, if you were moderating a forum...
Yeah.
For the LGBTQ community.
Right. Sponsored by HRC.
Sponsored by HRC. And listen, I have my issues with HRC.
I have all the issues with
certainly
HRC.
When it comes to issues like pronouns, I don't know that they necessarily are anyone to judge because they were fucking horrible to the trans community for years.
They don't know anything.
They don't give a shit about anyone who would need to say their pronouns. No. But my point is that as Chris Cuomo, man who is hosting a forum specifically on this issue and a supposed journalist, it just seems like no better.
Yeah.
That's all. No, I have a side note to make before we move on.
Yeah, please.
Which is that Buttigieg got into some hot water today for shit-talking candidates who are only taking small donors. And yes. Even AOC tweeted about it.
Yeah, she did.
And because he was, I don't know where he was, I can't remember where this interview was, but he did an interview where he kind of made some kind of obnoxious remarks about the strategies some of the other people are pursuing.
What does he think that gets him?
He said something about how we just can't rely on small potatoes donations. And I was like,
well, we can because they're outraising you.
So we can.
So it's working just fine.
Seems fine. Seems like it's working out great.
Yeah.
Also, fuck off.
Yeah.
All the way.
Yeah.
In any case, that was a side note that I just wanted to add before I forgot.
Yeah.
I'm mad at him again.
Yeah.
I'm mad at him, though. Right. I can't stop being mad at him. I'm also mad at Mike Bloomberg.
Obviously you are.
I realize that this is not a change of pace. I've been mad at him for decades at this point.
Sure.
But now, because Biden is flailing,
yeah,
Bloomberg is suddenly like, ugh, maybe I am going to have to run for president.
There needs to be an old white moderate.
That's right. There needs to be a Republican in the race.
Republican, right.
Because I would like to remind everyone who thinks that Bloomberg is great because he donates money to gun violence issues that Michael Bloomberg was the Republican three-time mayor of New York City in a city that has term limits and only lets you be the mayor twice.
Right. Yeah.
Michael Bloomberg is a Republican, you guys, and a billionaire. But yeah. We already have a billionaire in the race, so that's covered. It's not like the race is missing a billionaire.
No.
He just thinks in this sort of tone, this ridiculous tone that you can imagine him having where he like is whining about how he might have to run for president.
Yeah.
He just is sort of like, ugh. You know, staying out, this is according to sources close to him who won't go on the record because everyone's fucking terrified of him. But, you know, I was staying out because enough people were running. But, you know, he has to still look at a run because, you know, if Biden drops out early, who's going to carry forth? Who, aside from the 18 people in the race who also have the same platform as Joe Biden, will carry forward that mantle with the name recognition of Michael Bloomberg?
Who will allow me to continue to be taxed at the rate at which I'm currently taxed?
That's right. I have a message for him, though. Literally anybody. There are only two candidates in the race
that want to raise
who want to raise your taxes.
Yeah,
you could, and you know what? You're not more fucking famous than Kamala Harris at the moment.
No,
you're certainly not more likable or famous than Cory Booker.
No,
I mean, there are a trillion people.
Throw your weight behind one of them if you want. I mean, I would hope that you wouldn't, but there are people out there that would do a better job at furthering your message.
That's right.
Than you would.
And he, like so many deluded rich people, thinks that somehow it's all on his shoulders.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Because he's the only one who can get us out of this now.
100%. Yeah.
And this is a man.
I alone can do this.
That's right.
Right? That's as famously Donald Trump said.
That's right.
That's
what this is.
He would be the Donald Trump in the race.
Yeah. Except he would actually be a billionaire because he has $51 billion.
Sure.
He was planning to spend over $100 million on his reelection campaign.
Wow.
You know what? the right has Sheldon Adelson. Why don't you donate that money to the left?
Sure.
If you care about the cause,
yeah,
go ahead and donate that money. He won't.
Right.
Because he thinks it has to be him.
Right.
But he could.
Or advocate for raising your own taxes, which would, well, that's have, what, like, which would have more benefit for the greater good of society than it would be for you to getting $100 million
to donate a lot of money into the race, but it's not going to be for the right kind of candidate. Right.
Or even specifically to gun violence. I mean, like, as much as I sort of, like, can thank him for doing that, it's, you know, we've talked a million
times. Well, we have our feelings about philanthropy.
Right, right. You know, I mean, it's just sort of like if that was, if he actually paid an appropriate tax rate on his $51 billion, you know,
maybe the NRA's lobbyist money wouldn't be as impactful.
America
as...
and the earth would be better off than if he was just only donating specifically to gun violence issues.
Yeah, that's right. So. He's a man who spends a lot of money on the campaign cycle, but generally in a way that sounds like he's doing it for all of us and is actually just about his own wealth.
Right.
Like, this is not a man whose money is going to go to the greater good ever. No. Don't ever, a billionaire's money never is.
Nope.
So don't ever expect that a billionaire has your back.
They don't.
As we saw on many a meme generated by the Ellen DeGeneres and George Bush photo, the rich have class unity, do you?
Plute's gonna plute.
Plute's gonna plute. But so in any case, fuck all the way off.
Yeah.
Michael Bloomberg.
God. Ugh.
Like, if you want to support a billionaire in the race, Tom Steyer is even making the debates for unknown reasons.
Yeah.
Using his billions of dollars.
That's right.
So you have someone.
Yeah.
And this brings us to the impeachment part of the podcast.
Ooh, buddy.
This was a big week in impeachment world, and it was also a confusing week in impeachment world. So there's a lot that happened, and it wasn't immediately clear what all of it meant.
Sure.
So we're going to try to do our best to kind of review the main points.
Great.
And then talk about what happens next. So the first is that Marie Yovanovitch, the former Ukraine ambassador, testified before the House. She defied the State Department's gag order, which was inspired.
Yeah.
And she testified before the impeachment inquiry and basically said she was forcibly removed based on trumped up charges that Giuliani had sort of, you know, perpetrated. He was basically running a smear campaign against her, saying she was bad-mouthing Trump and actively protecting Biden from investigation.
Oh, boy.
Which is conspiracy theory bullshit that no one has any proof of. And she also said that she was given support from the Deputy Secretary of State, John Sullivan, before she left. That the people who are actual sort of professionals left in the State Department, even as Trump was pulling her from office, were complimenting her job and work, you know, and saying she was doing good work. So, yeah. So the charges that she was removed on seemed even murkier once it became clear that the State Department apparatus that is actually professionals really valued her role there.
Yeah.
She talked about how the State Department is basically falling apart because Trump's people are all bad actors who are trying to sort of further their own self-interest.
Sure.
And that because countries are seeing that that's how they're operating, and so it's becoming really, you know, it means that bad actors in the international scene can easily manipulate us. It means that other countries are seeing what's happening in Ukraine and are realizing what, you know, what they can do to further their own interests at our expense because it's so easy. Her testimony didn't reveal any new details about the call with Zelensky because she was not on the call with Zelensky. Yeah. And what sort of became clear...
Like the only living human who wasn't on that call with Zelensky.
Well, and that's sort of been the case. She's the only living human in the entire Ukraine apparatus that wasn't on anything.
Right.
Because they were specifically keeping her out of the loop.
Right, they were...
So yeah, she, our professional diplomat of many years, she's served many presidents. She's like a pro State Department person. In a part of the world that's a little complicated, P.S.
Sure.
Was not privy to information that had to do with State Department
interests.
The job that she was doing.
She was doing, right.
She didn't supply the panel with any documents, but again, because she didn't, you know, have any. Like, last week, Kurt Volker gave them all those text messages, but that's because he had been texting with Giuliani. She was being left out of important conversations. But her willingness to cooperate also set a precedent, because now Sondland, the EU ambassador, who's been sort of wrapped up in this discussion as well, is going to testify next week. A senior State Department official, George Kent, who's involved in Ukraine, is also going to testify. And then this week already, or no, Sondland's testifying later this week.
This week.
Right. I forgot it was next week already. Fiona Hill, who was last week going to investigate next week, investigated today. I mean, testified today.
Testified, yeah.
She was the senior director for Europe at the National Security Council, the NSC, and she testified and had nothing but praise for Yovanovitch's job in Ukraine.
Yeah.
And she's actually British born, but she's a Russia expert. And she's somebody, she had been at Brookings before joining the Trump administration and resigned in June before the call with Zelensky,
right.
but is somebody who's considered like a reputable source
sure.
on these matters. And so that's what's going on with the impeachment inquiry. But yeah. then Giuliani.
This is so good.
Has some legal exposure himself these yeah. days. So first of all, he already has some legal exposure because he's, you know, probably violated the Logan Act, which is what prevents private citizens from just going and pretending to be diplomats in other countries.
Yeah.
And Trump is sort of distancing himself from Giuliani, yeah, pretending he's that, not spoken to him and doesn't know if he's still his
isn't
lawyer.
Isn't that delicious? Yeah, yeah, I know. He got asked if Giuliani was still his lawyer, and he was like, I don't know. I haven't right. talked to
and
him.
And Giuliani was like, and then Giuliani commented by being like, no, I'm his lawyer. And right. it was like, somebody should know the answer. But that's because there were two indictments that get very close to Giuliani.
Yeah.
That
like very close in the sense that like you can
they're immediately
look at
next
all
to.
The all
they're
the
associates of Rudy Giuliani's.
Right, exactly. Just palling around all over the place.
And it's two people that are kind of also tangential to the Ukraine scheme.
Yes.
Because so these two guys, Lev Parnas and Igor Fruman, were indicted on campaign finance charges this week. They're both born outside the U.S. and the allegations are that they funneled up to $1 million in foreign cash into PACs and campaigns, including Trump's, in the last cycle.
Yeah.
Trump is saying he has no idea who they are. He doesn't know right. them, but there are pictures of them together.
He's also been photographed with them. Right.
Yes, now. Exactly. But the indictment could shed a little more light on the campaign's attempt to get dirt on Joe Biden because they were involved in that, and Giuliani is obviously also involved in that, and also to remove Yovanovitch from from her role as ambassador.
Buddy.
So these indictments, people think, are probably going to shed some light on Giuliani's role in some of the illegal campaign finance schemes that were going on surrounding the Ukraine deal.
Yep.
And then on top of that, the State Department is in shambles.
Go figure. I mean, come
Mike
on.
Pompeo, instead of serving the national interest, is putting gag orders on his staff so that they can't testify before Congress.
Right.
And so
we know that he was on that call.
Exactly. So people are leaving their posts there,
yeah.
And nobody really trusts anyone because traditionally in a situation like this, the Secretary of State would not fucking abandon everyone who works for him
sure.
at the first sign of trouble.
Right.
But then on top of that, there were two court rulings. One of them we talked about last week, which was that a federal judge in New York ruled that Trump had to turn over his tax
yes.
returns to Manhattan state prosecutors. Yep. But then there was a D.C. Circuit Court ruling later in the week that upheld a Democratic subpoena for 8 years of Trump's financial records from his accounting firm, Mazars or whatever.
Sure.
And that, affirms that Congress has the authority to subpoena these documents, which Trump was trying to argue they didn't because he's the president.
right.
And also means we might get them. I mean, they're going to put up as many roadblocks as they can
of
to
course.
Them. But it's sort of also suggested as sort of part of these hearings that maybe the judge is also going to order the release of Mueller's grand jury materials. Like, it seems like there might be some other stuff.
Which the Democrats have been looking
to get
at or to get forever
yeah.
because they have sort of like wanted the specific evidence
mm-hmm.
From the report. So that's where they
yeah.
would get that.
So it looks like this court situation that the longer the White House tries to kind of run out the clock, the more information they might be looking at getting released.
Well, and I think what's interesting about this is because we're talking about court rulings and we talked about one last week, you know, I think what the big question that I think a lot of people have, because like they have already decided that they are going to, you know, ignore congressional subpoenas.
Right.
Are they going to actually ignore court orders?
Right. When it seems like if they appeal the ruling, it's probably going to go to the Supreme Court. Like,
right.
the Justice Department is probably going to appeal this ruling. It's probably going to end up in front of the Supreme Court. And not only does that create an interesting dynamic for this Supreme Court to hear, but it also, at the point that they're not abiding by court decisions, they are,
yeah.
like, breaking a law. There is no precedent for the president not having to follow court orders.
Right. Like, yes, right. I mean, there's...
It's not...
Right. There's some debate as to whether they can sort of, like, be... you know, investigated criminally.
Right. But there is not a debate about whether or not they are subject to court decisions.
Right.
So that would be exciting.
It would be.
Slash too exciting. Slash if
yeah.
they could just... What is in these tax returns?
I know.
Because at this point, they have spent a lot of energy making sure we don't get them.
For sure.
Like at this point, it was one thing when they were just like making it sound like they were too lazy to release them. This makes
right.
it... And not that we didn't know what they were up to at the time, but like... This really makes it feel like there is something super incriminating
right.
in those tax returns.
Yeah.
Because they are working really hard to not do a thing that every president in the past for all of remembered history has done.
I agree with you that there probably is something very bombastic in them. But also, I didn't invent this opinion, but it's... I like this opinion, is that there are some people who think that the thing that might be really damning in there...
It's just that he's not that rich.
It's just that he's not that rich. And I think for him to fight this as hard as he is just very much sort of like a pride thing with him. Now, it would be delicious if there were like more things in there that could sort of like play into this whole impeachment inquiry. But like, it would also be pretty rich if we just found out that he wasn't that rich.
Yeah. I wouldn't be shocked if he was broke, Brent, and I'll tell you why.
Well, I wouldn't either. I mean, he's filed for bankruptcy on multiple occasions.
Because my whole life he's been a man who's been bankrupt.
Right.
I also would not be shocked if what the tax returns show is like a huge amount of kind of like city and state level bullshit corruption.
Oh, I think so, yeah.
That is the kind of thing that just slowly eats away.
Probably like... no donations to nonprofits or anything like that, you know, like no donations to like supposed church that he goes to.
Or,
it's those things that probably bother him more than like the politicalness of this.
Donations to everyone.
Oh, that could be too.
Because I think he's a man who, he was pro-choice until very recently. He was a Democrat until very recently.
Yeah.
He's a man whose political donations, which like every person who's rich person in New York City, he's donating to both sides. I get that.
Yeah.
I think that... he has probably been donating to a lot of things.
Oh, I think so.
That, not much, obviously. He's not a generous man. But but he's probably been donating to a lot of causes that he does not want his base to know he ever supported.
I could see that.
He's a businessman in New York City. He knows he's been having to buy off local interests for years.
Oh, right.
So what does that mean? That means you're having to buy off city and state level politicians in a city that is famously quite progressive in certain areas, a lot of those being the areas you're trying to build in.
Right.
So what do you need to do to buy off the city council person in, you know,
who represents Soho? You got to give a bunch of money to a
Democrat.
Right.
You got to give a bunch of money to a Democrat. What do you need to do to buy off the city council person who represents Columbus Circle?
Yeah.
You got to give a bunch of money to a Democrat. So, like, there's also some stuff in there that is very much a quid pro quo, like direct payoff for access type thing.
Yeah,
but he's like people he does not want to look like he was in bed with, that he has been very much in bed with.
Yeah.
He's been in bed with everybody.
Yeah.
He's unfortunately.
Yeah. I know.
What a gross visual.
Yeah.
As far as the timetable for this impeachment inquiry, it seems like the Democrats wanted to sort of like have this all handled by Christmas and like have some articles of impeachment that they could vote on like, you know, by Thanksgiving. It feels like it's going to take more time than that.
I think so too.
Because, and I don't, I mean, that was optimistic anyway. No one really knew what the timetable was, but
I think there's pros and cons to, there's pros to ending it early and there's pros to it dragging on longer. Because I think the quicker you get it done, the less people think that it's all a charade.
Right.
But the longer that it goes on, the more sort of daily bombshells I think that you get out of it too.
I think, you know, a lot of people have been saying, oh, they don't want it to drag into the 2020 election. You know, sort of world. I think it's actually kind of a good thing if it does, because I think it will get Democrats to the polls and get them engaged and also rally them behind whoever ends up winning.
And it certainly makes him more volatile than he...
It reminds you why this all matters.
Yeah.
Because with him just throwing weird curveballs at us all the time and us doing nothing, that's no way to get Democrats to think we should elect Democrats.
Right.
Democrats sitting and doing nothing. Like, this would be like an ongoing sign.
Yeah.
First of all, it would be an ongoing way for us to find out what new crimes he's committed from reputable sources. But the second thing is that it would mean that we are stealing back some of the news cycle.
Yeah.
And it's really hard to do that with him.
It is.
He makes it really difficult.
Yeah.
And so if you have candidates who are running on positive messaging, candidates that are saying, I will do this for you, I want to move towards this, and then in the background, you have the reminder of why Trump is dangerous so that the candidates don't need to be the person who reminds you that.
Yeah, it's a solid
I don't think it's a
punch.
Bad thing. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think it's worse when the candidates have to remind you that, because then they waste valuable time inspiring you.
Right.
Or that they could spend inspiring you, telling you why everything's terrible. And it's like, I don't want to elect someone who's just going to remind me of how shitty everything is. It is already quite shitty.
Yeah.
In any case. The other thing, and we talked about this a little bit last week, but things have fallen apart further, is... there's a sort of other variable in this conversation, which is Syria.
Yes.
It seems like Syria could be the thing that undoes some of his lockstep Republican
right.
support because they Republicans are not happy,
not
about,
happy about this at
what's
all.
Going on in Syria. And he kind of doubled down on the strategy this week.
But then also, I think, like, today, like, tweeted that now he's going to, like, put a bunch of sanctions on Turkey because of, like, what they've been doing. He doesn't know what he's doing here.
He's just doing whatever. Well, so the first thing that happened, so we were going to withdraw all of our troops. And as soon as we started withdrawing troops, Turkey got real active at the border with the Kurds.
Right,
and
which is what we knew was going to happen. That's why everyone was so mad.
It caused everyone to sort of get distracted. And because of that, like, 1,000 ISIS prisoners got out.
Yeah.
So we're replenishing
the ISIS.
Which is
what people were warning.
That was what people worried about would happen. We're replenishing the ISIS ranks. And we had contained their territory up until that point. So Trump had had this weird victory where we had sort of contained ISIS.
Right. He loved to tell
and,
you about it.
Yeah. And it looks like we undid all of that in a week. So ISIS suddenly has like 1,000 people who just like have been released to go back to fighting for ISIS.
Doing what they're doing.
And then on top of that, and by the way, the Kurdish forces were guarding like 11,000 ISIS detainees. So like letting that go to shit means that all of those detainees might just get out, because there were other camps that almost got out. But then meanwhile, Trump ordered even the remaining 1,000 troops that we had there to be immediately taken out. And because of that, the Kurds had to turn to Assad for support with the Turkey border skirmish.
Right.
And so suddenly Assad, who we were also trying to get out of the picture because he's in bed with Iran
with
and the Russians.
Right. That's the thing. You've now got the Kurds sort of aligned potentially with Russia, at least by way of Syria, which was not what we were looking for. But again, something that anyone who knew about this situation could have told you was going to happen.
Right.
He did say was going to happen.
Exactly.
Basically everything that it's like the one thing that the Republicans have been right about in the last, like, in basically like my lifetime.
Exactly.
Like when Trump said that he was going to do this, you know, Lindsey Graham was like, X, Y, and Z are going to happen, and X, Y, and Z have happened.
Well, and we were in a sort of bizarre third way situation there anyway, because Turkey's a NATO ally. So we were trying to kind of keep it together with Turkey, even though Erdogan is a nutso person and they were not acting predictably or responsibly.
Right.
But we were really trying to keep Assad from taking back Kurdish territory.
Yep.
We were trying to sort of keep the Russia influence minimal at best. And so we were kind of like, we were supporting the Kurds because they were sort of in the middle of all of it.
Right. And they I think what people felt was so ugly about this, besides the fact that sort of like it just didn't make sense to, you know, to abandon them. But also they have helped us so much.
Yeah. No,
in the region. And so I think everyone also sort of felt like, all right, well, we sort of like elicited this help from, you know, this group who has like a fairly good fighting force that has really sort of like helped us like lock that region down. And then as soon as, you know, they kind of did what it was that, you know, we wanted them to, we just abandoned them to sort of like to die, basically.
Yeah.
I mean, is what we did.
And now we're pursuing like another weird strategy where Trump is like, okay, fine. Turkey's being irresponsible, so we're sanctioning them.
Right, so we'll just ruin Turkey's economy. But that, like you said, they're one of our NATO allies.
They're one of our NATO allies. And now what we have is a war in Syria in which, in which Assad is now, and Assad and the Kurds are now having to work together against Turkey, which means the Kurds are now sort of on the Russia/Assad side.
Right.
And Turkey, our NATO ally, and listen, no one's a good actor in this situation. I get it. That's why we were dealing with the Kurds, who are also not good faith actors, but whatever. But so now we're sort of like picking the Assad side, basically, because now we're going to try to further hamper Turkey's role in this skirmish, while the Kurds have now been sort of left to become Assad fighters.
Yeah.
And so the battle is now not between a third player between two idiots. The battle is between the sort of Russia player and the NATO player.
Yeah.
And we are now choosing the side of the Russia player.
Go
figure. By trying to penalize the NATO player. And listen, I'm not arguing Turkey's doing the right thing. I'm not arguing Turkey's up to anything good.
Right.
I'm just saying, like, we created an unnecessary sort of, like, heightened the war situation in Syria anyway. Like, the violence in Syria is going to get worse now. But we also created a sort of duality that didn't exist before, where it used to be there were a lot of groups fighting in that region and we were sort of like trying to contain all of them. And now we just have two groups, one of which is a sort of group, one of which is a country that is backed by our allies and one of which is Russia backed. And we've sort of let them loose on each other. And now we're trying to hamper the NATO ally. Like, it doesn't make any sense what we're up to.
No.
And because of the fighting, all of the aid groups have had to leave.
Yeah,
because
it was already dangerous there anyway. And, you know, we had all of, like, yeah, we had these aid groups who were mostly in Syria anyway, because they were, like, it's such a shit show there.
Yeah.
And now it's just sort of, like, unsafe for all of these people to be there because...
Right, so there's all of these people who are trying to evacuate. There's no aid. There's nowhere for them to go. We've increased the danger they're all in by a zillionfold.
And by what's going on with ISIS now, too, we've also increased the danger to us.
Right.
Yeah, you know...
Of
for
just
terrorist attacks.
The general terrorist situation that we were in there in the first place to deal with.
Right.
No, the whole... It's a mess.
Yeah.
I don't think we even did a good job of explaining it because it's too complicated.
It is.
But we made it... I mean,
didn't do foreign policy either.
No, it was already unnecessarily complicated.
Yeah.
And it was something that I think there was sort of a fair amount of sort of concern about in Congress. Enough so that when Trump did this, everyone was like, what the fuck, man?
Right.
And now, basically, if you take away nothing else from the story, take away that all of the things we predicted would happen did happen as soon as the thing we shouldn't have done was done.
Yeah.
So there's that. meanwhile, today in nonsense news.
Yeah.
Obviously, Trump supporters are famous for their love of tasteful and sensible political critiques. So at the pro-Trump... rally at a pro-Trump group, American Priority, that was holding an event at his Miami resort last week.
Yeah.
They showed a video.
Mm-hmm.
And that video was a
it was
an
Kill
edited
Bill.
Scene from The Kingsman.
Oh, it was from The Kingsman?
Kingsman, yeah.
Oh, I thought it was from Kill Bill.
No, it was... Well, this... So somebody released the video to The Times, and as The Times described it, it seems like it matches the profile of a video that has been on YouTube since 2018.
Oh, interesting.
Okay. That is a edited Kingsman clip.
Okay.
In which somebody goes into a church and shoots up a church.
Yeah, it's in it. Right, yeah.
And in this clip, the president's head is superimposed on the shooter.
Yep.
And then he goes in and shoots up the parishioners who have had their heads replaced with logos of media organizations and other activist groups. So like Black Lives Matter and things like that. And also,
I think Kathy Griffin gets shot.
She sure does. Yeah. So basically, you know, like PBS, NPR, Politico, like those kind of people get shot.
Yeah.
And Black Lives Matter gets shot.
Right.
Bernie Sanders' head gets set on fire. And then Maxine Waters gets thrown through a window.
Right.
And then, you know,
Mitt
John McCain, George Soros, Mitt Romney, Obama, Mika Brzezinski, Hillary Clinton, and then Rosie O'Donnell and Kathy Griffin, which are a hilarious addition to this, as if they are
relevant. Kathy Griffin, who famously had her career almost ruined for taking a photo shoot where she had beheaded Trump.
Right.
You know?
Like,
it's like,
everybody,
now this is okay.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
You know, Vox, Vice, everybody. Everybody gets taken down in this clip.
Yeah.
YouTube put an age restriction on it, but did not take the video down.
Yeah.
But suddenly, as soon as it became a controversy, because somebody leaked the video to The Times, the event organizers were like, well, who knows how this happens? This had nothing to do with us. It was just being shown in another part of a room that we couldn't possibly have known anything about it. And the video was not sanctioned by us. But just to be clear, first of all, they take a swipe at The Times for reporting on it in their statement about how they had nothing to do with anything.
Yeah.
And then also, this is an event where, like, Don Jr. was speaking, Sarah Huckabee Sanders was speaking, Matt Gaetz was speaking. Like, this was an event where, like, prominent Trump supporters were speaking and featured.
Yeah, this wasn't just like some, like, you know, get together of like crazy cranks.
No, and it was being held at
those people are crazy cranks, but I mean, like,
at his hotel.
Yeah.
So like, fuck off, everybody.
Yeah.
Stephanie Grisham, the new press secretary, tweeted on Monday that the president hadn't seen the video yet, but based upon everything he's heard, he strongly condemns it. Yes.
He saw it and loved it.
Loved every moment of it.
Yeah.
First of all, he's a man who has tweeted a video of him taking down CNN in a wrestling match.
Oh, that's right. Yeah,
so he's not against, he's not above, you know, violence against the media.
No, he's not.
But in any case, the one thing he does want us to take out of this week is something really important that has to do with voting.
Yeah.
That is.
He wants you to get to the polls.
That's right. Certainly something that he feels like will, you know, have an impact on the things that really matter to him.
That's right.
Because he wants to make sure that everybody votes for Sean Spicer in Dancing with the Stars tonight.
Guys, he's bad.
He's...
As it may...
This is a man who is not going to make it far in Dancing with the Stars.
He's already made it too far.
Yeah. It's this
lucky
is,
for him, Lamar Odom is the worst dancer that has ever danced. ever.
I wouldn't call either of them dancers, P.S.
No.
But this is a man who should not be on a dancing television show.
Correct.
And this is a man who has embarrassed himself enough already.
Yeah, I mean,
he wore weird makeup that tanned him on. He loves right. He was the Easter Bunny.
He was the Easter Bunny forever.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I mean, this is a man who has embarrassed himself already, and yet we are here to say
right.
that this is a man who should think twice about what his role is on Dancing yeah. with the Stars and whether he wants to keep doing that.
Ugh.
But Donald Trump, who may have been trolling him by
I know,
saying
that's
this.
What I'm so curious about, like, whether he actually, I'm wondering if he, like, felt like this would have a negative impact. Because, like, I don't know, it was a weird choice for him to actually.
When he also said, because he tweeted, "Vote for good guy Sean Spicer tonight on Dancing with the Stars. He has always been there for us."
Hmm.
What does that mean?
I don't know.
How?
I know how.
He didn't like Sean Spicer. No, he thought he looked dumb on television.
Well, he did.
I mean, he was right. But he only looked dumber when Donald Trump started making him wear makeup and shit.
Oh, I know.
Him yeah. fake tanning was the dumbest he's ever looked.
Not it.
No. So in any case, if you have theories about why Donald Trump wants us to vote for Sean Spicer yeah. in Dancing with the Stars, we are interested in hearing them.
But while you're at it, vote for anyone else.
Right. But I would not suggest taking his advice.
No.
For don't do that. Just for television. Do yeah. it for television. Don't even do it for politics.
Right.
Don't do it for Trump. Just do it for television.
That's right.
And with that, we will talk to you next week.
Yeah. Enjoy the debate.
Enjoy the debate.
We'll be tweeting.
We will be live tweeting the debate, so make sure you're following us on Twitter. If you follow us on Twitter and want to retweet what we're tweeting about the debate, feel free.
Hey, do that.
I feel like not enough people are interacting with us during the debates.
That's right.
But they could be.
Sure could be.
But so we will see you on Twitter, and then we'll also see you next week.
Yeah.
Bye.